Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
John, it's good.
John, it's fine.
John, it's the only one that's okay. It is. Well, actually, a funny thing, the very first campaign Star Wars episodes, they weren't even campaign Star Wars thing. The one thing that Johnny, JPC, Kat, and I had agreed to is we wanted it to start in a situation where the Empire broke into a bar and each character said, "They're here for me. They're here for you." And that became the whole thing. So once again, we're kind of with that, but with horrors.
The horrors.
You know, the horrors.
You know.
I believe Oromar had a plan or some kind of plan. But
he was going to hop off the ship and go speak to or try to get a conversation with the Rasulka.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is not something I anticipated. And I can't wait to see it, frankly. Everyone else, I believe, is at or around the ship, unless you would not like to be. That is your call?
No, I will be at or around the ship.
I think that at or around the ship is. Although I do want to talk to Oromar real quick before we do any sort of jumping off the boat.
Fair enough. We can, I think the previous moment was like, oh, I need to go and speak to the Rasulka. There's a marching back onto the like main deck of the ship. And has pulled on the jacket with the feather weave embroidery with a bid to be using it for later. But because he's getting himself ready, he's not left the deck of the ship yet, if you would like to intervene.
I can't remember. I thought he jumped off the deck of the ship. Did anybody else remember
Bland
that?
Of
did just say that?
I mean, we can hit rewind on that oh so slightly before he goes
like,
and
I literally
off,
can't remember, and the way that I know these things are edited, we do want to make an effort to preserve whatever continuity
that level of continuity, sure.
Because Allie doesn't hear the next chunk really until the previous chunk has been done. So
of course.
We've got to retroactively adapt to whatever happened.
Account for all possibilities. Let's just say that Oromar jumped off the ship where suddenly a window washing station had been set up to wash the windows, so he only jumped onto a plank just outside outside.
He stands on the edge of the ship and prepares to do that cool jump off out of frame, and then just lands on a second platform next to like a porthole style window.
Wait,
Gable just sticks their head through the window.
Captain?
Yes.
Are you?
Sorry, I was in the middle of doing something.
Are you going someplace?
I need to go and have a chat about the Rasulka with the Rasulka, since it seems that the Cutting Stone are apparently trying to make another attack on my life, even though I'm not dead anymore. So I'm very confused, honestly.
Well, I might have a little insight. Oopsie daisy.
Okay,
we don't know for sure, but also I. was doing a little magic on the beach, and the magic may have...
I don't know why you're so nervous. Everybody's done a little bit of magic in privacy from time to time. That's human.
But we cut to just a montage of different configurations of Uhuru crew members on a beach having magic moments together. you know, a lot of it is people like clinking like little bottles of light beer together. There's definitely a beach volleyball scene starring whichever crew members you think would be the funniest. And are they all in two-piece bathing suits? You better believe it. Yes. That's the style of the time. Mm-hmm. I think we established that previously. There's definitely one where there's a little bonfire on the beach and somebody's singing with guitar around the fire. It is a magic moment, but everybody else who's around that fire is like, they're kind of exchanging looks like, I can't believe this person brought a guitar to the beach. They're actually kind of ruining the vibe. Still magical moment, though.
Yes, this one wasn't. I would say it was still fun, but it was not probably the most opportune thing to do when one is attempting to be incognito. And I don't know that for sure. We can't say that for sure that this is what's happening. But also, I feel like they might be here.
You're dancing around the point. They
might be here for me and not you. But you are mortal and more vulnerable than he used to be, so
the expression that Orimar gives at being described as more vulnerable than he looks genuinely like hurt.
I'm so sorry. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. You are more less.
You are under stress and being careless with your words. I will let that go.
I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry, but I'm trying. Okay, how about I go with you? I go with you, and maybe we can bring Jonnet, because Jonnet can also. I don't think we should be on the ground, but also I don't know what else to do in this situation.
I'm already walking down to the ground.
No.
You're leaning off the top of the deck looking down at us on this window washing platform.
As if I would even let you leave me behind.
Okay. I don't think we should. I think we should just leave. But also, I'm not the captain. I can't make you do anything. It's
well, you were with Travis Matago and I when we spoke to the Rusalka and Dumignon. So I suppose having you around for this conversation as well would behoove, since you are apparently acquainted. In that case, please command a member of the ship to get the Uhuru into the air. Since you're not going to be in a position of piloting, and we will work our way forward from the ground.
Yeah, okay. Gable just pulls themselves up to deck level and looks around and sees...
Wait, that's... So I had pictured you shoving your head through a porthole. So yeah, now you're scrambling.
Pushed myself through the porthole and up and over to the deck to see who's at the helm. See who's near the helm. And it's probably just a tween...
Okay, you think it's a tween? I was picturing Bowser, because we had established that
Bowser.
Oh,
yeah, we trained Bowser. We don't know that Bowser's not a tween, though.
Also don't know how verbal Bowser is. You know, they just kind of do those roars.
Hey, Bowser. Hey, sweetie. Hey, how are you?
Allie, you can just drop in the sound effect for the roar that Bowser makes.
That's great. You're looking so good. Okay, honey, I'm going to need you to do some of the stuff that we learned. Get the ship up in the air and probably a little bit move it towards starboard, away from the sea. And is there anything you need before we head out? No? Okay, thank you so much. You're the best. Thank you. Take care of yourself.
We stressed fast, right?
Yes.
Okay, all right.
But as much as they can lumber from foot to foot.
Wait, where are you going?
We have a conversation that needs to happen.
But if we go into the air critically, a thing that I kind of need to know, how are you coming with the ship?
Well, I had my own plans in mind, and then I had to accommodate for my members of the council. I do not necessarily know how they intend to ascend into the air without prearranged technology or planning.
I'm not
but
sure.
I trust their inventiveness.
Release one of the birds? It's the conditions aren't great.
That's a wonderful idea. Yes, we have
the
a little
birds.
Feathery elevator, don't we? No, no, you're
I don't
smart.
Know that that's how you should think about birds, but...
Feathery elevator, yes.
All right. Be careful.
You want to come with?
Please don't. We need as many hands on actual deck as possible to go and handle any technical issues on the ship, if there are
but
any.
But you want to...
I kind of
I'll come down
like
with the birds.
Want.
I'll come down with the birds, and it'll just be real
and
quick,
we'll
a real
it
quick
out from
fight.
There.
Yeah, come down with the birds for a real quick fight, and then everybody will leave, and it will just be a quick fight. We'll only do a little bit of fighting, and then we'll leave. Critically is the thing.
What if it's fun?
Pinches the bridge of his nose. Fine.
Let's go.
Kind of fun.
You can see Nodo's like kind of scampers off, like all excited that he's gonna get in a big fight. Great. So you have decided to head towards the river in hopes of having a conversation with the Rusalka. Right now, there is no player character leadership aboard the Uhuru. The Uhuru has been ordered to try and get themselves into the air as quickly as possible. The storm is kicking up as it goes. We've got the Cutting Stone moving in towards the island. So what I need everybody to do, we are going to try a new initiative system thing. I'm going to do a popcorn style initiative system, which is you are going to know exactly how many initiative slots are going to be in the fight, and you will be able to bounce between player characters and non-player characters in that way. We are going to have the obviously three PC slots, and then we're going to have one allied slot. And we are going to have four non-player character slots. Now, for this, on your turn, everybody has what is like a action, which can be like an attack action, whatever, a movement or incidental action. So like if you want to do something like make a spot check or a knowledge check or whatever, you can do that without sacrificing your attack action. You can also replace your action with an action that you have the crew do if you would like to do that. If you would go, well, I'm on the helm or whatever, I'm going to order Wendell from the crew to attack somebody. That's totally fine.
The other thing
is at the start of this fight, I hope everybody has their character sheets pulled up. At the start of this fight, you can spend from any of your stats to change something about the conditions of the fight if you would like. We're trying to create like a rough correspondence. If you want something to be there, I'll probably want you something to be there that is not there. I'll probably want you to have a fate. But if you want like, ooh, I did some foresight, some preparation or whatnot, you can spend from your like intellect and reserve it to bring up in the fight later at the moment that you think you might need it. Do any of those spends at this time. And if you don't have them, what I think I'm going to do is we'll start things off with a PC slot and assume that the three of you are kind of at the side of the ship now, like moving towards the center of the island where this river is appearing.
Mm-hmm. I think I do have an opportunity to spend to kind of set things up for our allies
first.
Yeah.
I'd love to spend a point from reputation, maybe even 2 points from reputation, to kind of spend on, I guess, Carlos as a named furnaceer. To get that stage of the process going a little faster.
I love it. Yeah. Okay. So Carlos, it is not just going to be that Carlos is the furnaceer who's in charge and will be an attached character, but we're spending reputation on it. So I am going to say there's going to be like an extra upgrade in Carlos's thing because he is a furnaceer of repute.
Mm-hmm. How many points would you estimate that spend being? One or two?
I am going to say two because we'll say it's for the whole combat that you're doing this.
All right. That's been spent. At time of recording, I spent a very lengthy podcast making a whole bunch of abilities for Oromar, wrote it down in the notebook, and the notebook is not physically in eyeline. I'm present. I am just retrieving it, but okay. I'm here.
Yeah, it's okay. I mean, nobody else has their abilities yet either, really. I think there's like a small smattering for... Yeah, we'll have to schedule time, Liz and Tyler, to finish building out your folks. But
we'll see.
Well, we will. Hey, Liz, we'll see.
We'll see.
You're going to play this game. You're going to play this game because otherwise we can't sell the game. When we finish the game, we can't sell the game if you're not playing the game.
If 2 out of 3 people play the game, that's still the majority of people playing the game.
And you're playing Calvin Ball instead, huh?
Yeah.
Okay, if I'm going to actually play this game and Liz is not, then I want double.
But it can skip over.
I want double.
So at any given time, two of us must be playing the game. But it doesn't need to be the same person, same two people playing the game.
Yeah. So someone can completely forget the game. Anywho.
You know what? I'm going to compromise. I'm going to say Johnny doesn't have to learn the game. How about that? That's my compromise.
Who?
Yeah. You know what? Johnny has to learn the game. JPC doesn't have to learn the game.
Fair. Tough, but fair.
But yeah, I figured I would test run some of these silly mechanics that we have made.
Let's go.
Go, Nathan.
All right. So yes, with those 2 points spent, is there any anything else that the team wants to kind of like set our crew up for being able to do in advance?
I mean, it makes total sense that you're the best Carlos like pilot that we have, but I was also like, man, what can we give to Carlos to truly just like hypercharge their ability to get the fires, like the furnaces running? And I don't think I have anything outside of just a boon to Carlos. So,
Do you want to spend like a point of wealth or something to say that the peat is already where it needs to be?
I was like, what would wealth be for in this scenario? But yeah. Is that kind of wealth thing?
I think finesse. In your case, I do like this, but this is either an intellect or maybe charisma spend from you or presence spend from you because you were the one who was in charge of the peat moving operation. So
I'd say then like maybe just in terms of like a presence, when Jonnet did find like the big deposit of peat that kind of like maybe got just it inspired folks. People were just like moving quickly and we have a fair amount of, let's say we've got a third of that peat deposit maybe already on the ship. It's enough to like get us in the air and get us going. It's maybe not all of it.
I like that. I think what I'll say is for that spend, that third of the peat deposit, you had moved into an immediate liftoff position. People were like, we can just move this into the cargo hold. And John was like, no. I want it ready to go. Because Tyler, I love the gift that you have given me, which is that all that peat is not yet loaded up onto the ship. That's great. They're stoking up the fires right now, trying to take off and also desperately loading the cargo hold at the same time, which rules. I think that is more tense and fun.
That's yeah. I feel like, is there a world where it's like Jonnet is like, oh, I don't know why you would want us to like put it in a ready position. And it's like, actually, I want it more than ready position. Like, let's like get these. Let's get the furnaces going to standby, like mode or like let's get them pre lit.
Full transparency, Tyler. I have a progress bar here for the furnace, like being hot enough for weave to take off. So what I think for one spend, for spending one point, I will let you have it in position. However, if you want to, each point that you want to spend after that, every 2 points you spend after that, I'll give you a tick on that progress bar. So if you just want to dump a bunch of points into the ship being ready to take off.
I'm dumping points.
You are more than welcome to.
All right. I'm dumping points.
You are dumping points?
Just two for position and then two for one tick.
Yep.
And then so now my presence. All right. Yes.
Okay, great.
When am I ever going to use presence roles? Although I probably should be tracking more. I'll do better.
Hell yeah.
Hell yeah. I love this. I really like that. Yeah, Jonnet was kind of throwing his weight around as like a person in charge of the operation and was like, no, I want this all in position and the furnace is lit immediately. I just have a feeling. And everybody's like, well, Jonnet's in charge. Let's do it. And so, yeah, what we see is Carlos aboard the Uhuru. There are swirling gray clouds behind him. There's like a lightning strike on the ocean in the distance that like part of their face is like lit up by this lightning strike in the distance. But we can see under lighting them they're at the bottom edges of their face, the orange glow of embers like starting to build up as that furnace is already lit.
Nice.
Let's get cracking, everybody.
Gosh. And yes, once again, you can see in like the soot covered, like the permanently soot covered face that Carlos has because, hey, we've been landed for a little bit. We've only just started relighting this furnace. There's still soot everywhere. There was no point where Carlos is like, well, better get rid of this soot that's on me. No, absolutely not.
Clouds.
Carlos's beautiful teeth are the thing that like shine through those shadows and whatnot. Hey heroes, it's James, your game master, and welcome to the Midroll. Heroes, this week is your last chance to back our Courier's Call Season 3 Kickstarter. We've already raised enough to fund a 30-episode season, but there are a few more tantalizing goals that lay on the horizon. At 17,000, Drew and I will sit down for a new behind-the-sales retrospective on Courier's Call. And if we manage to hit 20,000 before we close out this Kickstarter, we'll have a brand new Arnie Parrott song for Courier's Call. So head over to bit.ly/CCSeason3, follow the link in our show notes, or just search Kickstarter for Courier's Call Season 3. As always, a huge thank you to our backers over on Patreon. I just finished the manuscript for my new book, and that took up a lot of time. One of the things that I'm going to be doing this week and next week is preparing new bonus content for you over on Patreon. I don't exactly know what's going to be coming out first. It's really whatever I get around to editing or nudging the process of editing. But you will have new bonus content soon. Our backers on the playtest level are also going to see some stuff soon, so be on the lookout for that. And if you would like to be one of those backers, head over to patreon.com/oneshotpodcast and sign up to support us. That money helps us make this show. We wouldn't be able to do it without you. Now then, a quick word from our sponsor. And with all that out of the way, let's get back in the sky. Okay, so we have our first PC slot up at the start of this initiative. Who wants it and what do you want to do?
How do we get the Rasulka to show up is question number one.
I am happy to take a quick PC slot just to do some preparations to prevent the cutting stone from like reaching us temporarily. I don't know what that would look like. So like once we find our spot, I think Gable's going to try and maybe not even magically yet, but just set up some truly physical barriers to us being accessed for a little bit.
Interesting. I feel like this is possible. The thing that, like, I think no matter what, you're probably using magic to accomplish this, because if you're not using magic, you are using intellect, or it would probably be a very difficult presence thing for you to do. And you would have to either, like, if you wanted to use, like, straight up magic, you could just be casting a spell to somehow ward back the cutting stone, or you could be describing for me some kind of folk remedy or whatever that is supposed to ward off the cutting stone.
Yeah, I'm very hesitant to do more magic because I think that's how we got here.
So one thing that we have established is to protect themselves from the Forest Queen. Communities who live bordering forests have salt fences. They like lay down a line of salt that the Forest Queen's domain cannot pass. You could play on a folktale like that to say, like, because essentially to most people, the cutting stone represents death. And like a death that comes to find you. Transparently, I can reveal that the cutting stone is based on the Decemberists' song Cutting Stone from the I'll Be Your Girl album, which is about somebody who murders people when they are at like their lowest and most miserable state. That's like kind like it's kind of very cruel, but also it is supposed to be a mercy of killing somebody when they're at their lowest so that they are no longer suffering. So there are a lot of folktales about the cutting stone like coming to curtail people's suffering.
Okay.
So the ways that people might ward against that.
I still don't want to do magic. I'm trying to figure out a way to do prowess. Like, Gable lifts big pillars of salt and sets them down.
Prowess is going to be, that's going to be a tall order. That is going to be the hardest one to pull off. I feel like you are better off with something like intellect or presence. And that might be still drawing on your angelic nature. Yeah. But like,
let's do presence. And all that I think will translate to is doing all the remedies, but also just sort of building all three of us up physically so as to look intimidating, I guess. Just like, hey, here's a rock that we'll stand on top of. Here's just a shadowy place for us to be so we don't look like ourselves, that kind of thing.
I think you're probably better in the number two area. The idea that you might intimidate the cutting stone, I don't know that that's a thing.
Yeah.
But it's a good
hiding
tableau.
Yourself from the cutting stone.
Lack of presence is presence.
Yeah. Yeah. I could buy that. So I'll need you to make a presence roll. I think this is going to be hard. And I think one of those dice is going to be high stakes.
I'm going to tell you that I've got two D8s in present, present. So this is going to be challenging. That's a 6 and a 4.
Six and a four. And on the D8s?
Those are both D8s.
Yes. Okay. All right. Well, you did have at least one success. Ooh. Oh!
Oh no! Oh no!
Oh, no. Okay. Well, that success is not net. You do, in fact, have two failures against you. You do have an opportunity and a point of fate. So mark down that fate because you may need to use it.
Okay.
But I rolled a failure and a disaster, or two failures and a disaster. So the net is one. The net is going to be two failures and one disaster result.
For me or for you?
Well, this is for you. So you were trying to conceal yourself from the cutting stone.
Oh, gravy.
Gotcha.
And you did not succeed at that.
No, 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 no.
Not only did you not succeed at that, there was a disaster. So something critically bad happens alongside you not being able to conceal yourself.
Okay. Can I spend 3 points of fate right now? If that's something I can do to make that not happen.
No, I don't think it's a good idea to introduce the system to just shut down the results of rolls. Okay. That feels like that prevents interesting things from happening rather than embracing them.
Right.
You can use points of fate to soup up your rolls before you make them. Definitely there. I think we'd probably need to give special abilities to turn failures into like it would have to be a talent to turn a failure into a partial success in some way. Instead, we're going to accept. My first question is, how does Gable try to conceal the group from the cutting stone? What does that look like? What is Gable doing?
I think it starts out just as whatever goes along with your traditional stealth role. Like, oh, we get on the ground, we move fast, no one sees us or where we're going. And then as we aim towards the river area, trying to stick more towards, like, she lives in somewhat, trying to find the most brackish areas.
So she anything that is a river is technically her domain. The brackish thing was mostly a Dumignon special.
Yeah.
I'm gonna go along with you on this. Like, I think traditional stealth was part of it. However, I think that the superstition or the thing that is supposed to make you more invisible to the cutting stone is you are supposed to not be in a state of despair. So you are trying to clear your mind and heart of the tragedies in your life. And so you say that, I think, like at the top of this is like, hey, to prevent ourselves from getting seen by the cutting stone, you have to not focus on the bad things that have happened to you.
I think what this translates to is the entire walk, Gable has been just trying to keep up casual conversation. It's just like, well, when I take my coffee in the morning, I used to like cream, but now I just take it just with a little bit of sugar. It feels like I'm tasting the coffee, right? And it's such a powerful thing.
I really started doing that because Travis suggested. Travis did suggest to me to do the sugar thing. Well, we're not going to focus on that.
Remember who that is. And that's the weirdest part, isn't it?
If we survive this, then I'm going to make sure that you enjoy the pleasures of drinking your coffee black. Now, can we please focus for more than 30 seconds at a time?
Yes.
Yeah. I kind of think what happens, like you go on, try to maintain this conversation to draw people away from it. And because it's a failure, you keep introducing some of the bad things that happened to you. Like, you can't help but bring yourself, because you were just at the Saratura. Travis just disappeared. You just encountered the Morning Star again. Like, kind of all of these bad things are actually pretty fresh for you. And the thought of trying to hold them back is making them spill out in ways that you kind of can't control.
Yeah, I hate when my coffee is cold. Boy, it was really cold at the Saratura, huh? It was cold for
Gable!
A very long time. I'm sorry. I'm so sorry.
You just said.
I know.
It's fine. We need to keep our heads in the game, people.
And there is still the disaster that needs to be accounted for. And I think it is this. We get this kind of like bird's view of the island as we can see them coming up on this river. The river is like rushing quickly because this is like a flash flood condition, but this is not an island that normally has this much water on it. There's like kind of a small clear pond in the middle of the island, but this river is like a temporary feature. You can see beneath the water, even with like the rushing white caps of it, you know, fresh green grasses beneath. If it weren't so like windy, if it weren't so wet and stormy, if everything wasn't so tense, this would be a beautiful sight to behold. And you are relieved in certain ways for reaching the banks of this river. This is part of your goal. However, far upstream, we can see the water bulging against a stone fence on part of the island that is dividing some of the area where the sheep graze. And that fence, like, weakens to the point where one rock rolls away, and after that, a bunch of other stones roll away. The fence breaks, and the river splits, and we can see another channel of the river fencing you in on the other side. So, much like the Tigris and the Euphrates, you are now in this strip that is between two rivers. So between you and the Uhuru is another river, and in front of you is a river. So now you are kind of trapped in here. As we come to Liz, since we're trying this out popcorn style, do you want to give this over to a PC or an NPC or an ally slot?
I think PC makes sense to deal with our most immediate concerns.
Sure.
Nathan, if you got something, go for it. If not, I might have.
Hey, if you got the sauce, let's go for it.
Yeah. I think I will spend a intellect, or I'll pull from intellect. James, you tell me how much, but like, I would love it if where this is taking place is like we look left, look right, look to the right. It's like, oh dang, the rest of that peat deposit is like right next to us.
Oh,
how dense is peat? I'm over here like, maybe it's like, is there some kind of like projectile that Jonnet can be just like like slinging at people if things get very, very hairy, but I'm like, if it's not dense, then maybe it doesn't. It's not a weapon.
I mean, it's wet now. It's part of the issue.
It's definitely clods of mud if you'd be throwing
Yeah.
It's more, all right.
If you want a bunch of mud to be nearby, I'm not going to deny you that. I'm not going to make you spend on it.
I want mud so bad.
All right. Nathan, if you got something, go for it.
All right. I think if we're already like at the riverbank, or we're now kind of surrounded by rushing water on both sides, I think Oromar very specifically wants to put himself in the ability where he can talk to luminaries when he wants to, rather than just accidentally running into conversations with luminaries, and is going to be digging quite deep in himself to kind of work out how that can be done, which feels like that would be a magic either roll or spend. But I'm happy to make it, maybe it's a presence thing and it's a charisma kind of willing them into existence with force of personality.
Yeah. So what I will say is it is probably magic in some way, because you're trying to commune with an actual luminary. You are probably drawing on folk tales to do it. Because essentially it's like all you would have to go on is there are stories about people entreating the Rusalka for things. How would they go about doing that? Because you are trying to do that right now. So yeah, ooh. I feel like this is a spell, and it's kind of like a magic ritual almost.
My magic is quite low.
It's a 6, which means that I would only be rolling a D8 and a D4. D6.
Yeah.
Words.
You can juice that as you like.
It is 1 point spend to upgrade a D4. D6 into a D8.
Yes. Upgrading is 1 point. Adding a new die is 2 points.
Sure. I will spend 1 point for an upgrade, so I'm now at 5 magic. I'm happy to go and dig around for D8s.
So that doesn't take you up to 5 magic. What it does is it just turns your D6 into a D8.
Yeah, I guess I'm kind of tallying how many points of a thing I'm spending. Or does it not work that way?
No, it does work that way. Yeah.
Okay.
So you're spending down to 5. That makes sense. Okay.
I have my D8s.
Yes, you've got your D8s, and I'll say the Rusalka's themes are temptation, desire, and longing.
I think. Oh yeah. So I'm gonna roll them and then kind of say what I think Oromar draws the story to do. I think we've established that we can kind of feel the approaching presence of the cutting stone. Does it have a functional direction, or is it just kind of like the walls are closing in, it's in all directions?
It is definitely the walls are closing in, especially with that other river that has popped up here, and with what you saw earlier, you literally saw the cutting stone walking across the water towards the island.
Okay, so they're visible then. We can see them. That's good. That helps. Mm-hmm. Rolling those 2d8. And that is a 5 and a 4.
Ooh.
Okay.
And I think Oromar places, like, in a movement, scoops his hand through the water, letting it kind of run between his fingers. And as he does so, lifts some of that river water out from his hand, moves the hand to his chest as he then, in one dramatic turn, locks kind of in the breeze behind him with the turn, looks towards the approaching cutting stone across the water and holds the river-soaked hand to his heart and says, I know I'm going to need everything possible to go and face the cutting stone again. That includes speaking to you.
And I have rolled your challenge dice, and you succeeded with an opportunity. And Liz, I do want to remind, as bad as that roll was earlier, you also did have an opportunity that accompanied it.
What does that mean?
So that is a thing that doesn't get... Opportunities are not getting you what you wanted out of the role, but they are a good thing that happens for you, a positive thing. They're like advantages in the previous system.
Okay. Good to know.
Good to know. All right. Success and an opportunity, Nathan. I think upon the water, like, it is dark all around. There are lightning strikes in the distance, but the clouds are thick overhead. It is not yet evening, but it has the feel of evening. It is almost as though night has suddenly descended upon you. And though there is thick cloud cover, you can see in the water, in the rushing water, what looks like the reflection of the light of a star. It gathers into a dark-haired form, and soon enough, like, rising with and from the water, with a body that is a part of the water, still has the dancing grass within it, still has the white caps and the rushing flow, yet is undeniably a body, is the Rusalka herself. Oromar Vale.
Sky Jacks. Thank you.
We return once again to the captain's quarters on the Uhuru, where there is a mailbag overflowing with letters addressed to the captain and crew. We see Spit reading one now. Dear Uhuru, I've been auditioning to be a crew member on skyships like yours for some time now. Although I know I have what it takes to be a skyjack, I've not been chosen for any of my auditions yet. As a crew who holds these auditions regularly, what advice do you have for someone taking these auditions to stand out to the rest of the talented applicants and make a good impression on the audition panel? What's the number one thing you look for in an auditioning skyjack? Signed, Thanks.
You're welcome, Thanks. I think I'm more shocked that with the confirmation that other ships do auditions. I know we do auditions because we have a song in our heart, but right. I'm shocked that that's the process for other ships.
Well, Gabriel, you might be surprised to find that most people who are called to the Corsair in life, obviously there's the raiding and the violence and the lower workload of course, the homosexual orgies that draw in a lot of people looking for this line of work. But
yes,
behind all of that is a song in your heart.
Well, I should have known.
And of course, anti-government tendencies, can't forget those. And
general
disregard for law and order. Yeah, that's a big one.
There's a lot less dancing than
hatred for capitalism. But when you get through all of that, you cut through that jungle around the core is a song in your heart.
And dancing feet.
Yeah, I would say there are a number of pirate ships that do operate on a dancing-based policy and making sure that you have the previous solo career and professional development that you can do those songs and dances. There are many, many ships that only specifically want to go and hire triple threats in that they can swashbuckle sashay and sing an opera. So
tremendous. Yes. I always thought a triple threat was just saying, "Hey, you," three times.
I mean, certainly, if you can say it aggressively enough, I would consider it a threat all three times for sure.
I think that my first recommendation for folks trying to audition for any skyship is we got to cut it out with the stylized headshots. Okay, we need to be able to clearly see you and know and refer back to you, and we get so many like backlit, like shadowy, standing over the camera headshots. They look cool. They look so cool. Not really useful.
I gotta agree with John here. If I see another tennis racket, I'm gonna throw the whole resume out at that point.
It's a wonderful point. Standing out may not be a good thing. It may simply be just makes you more memorable in the future.
You are trying to be a part of a crew. The part of that is not standing out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, of course. And of course, if there are some big name pirate ships out there that are only interested in hiring those who have a certain degree of followers already,
who are kind of established,
and it can be really difficult to get to that stage in your solo career if you're not already working as part of a ship. But you have to kind of bear that in mind. If you're going for a pirate ship that everybody knows, then you're might going to be up against some people that are looking for a million bounties, 2 million bounties on their heads already.
Which is crazy. It's crazy because you think that a ship full of crew members with million-dollar bounties would be tip-top on, like, every bounty hunter's, like, you know, hit list.
Yeah, but those are only going to draw more attention.
Yeah. But, you know, that's just the way the industry is these days.
So
it's just high concentration of talent.
Are looking for that star power. But the problem is a lot of those crews, they're made up of people who are used to working alone. They're not good on a team, which is part of the problem.
Speaking of, have you ever tried doing a couple solo ships? doing some independent work and really building up your resume a little bit and figuring out what your voice is. And maybe then invite some of the captains that are in the area just to do a little spec work and see if we can get some representation.
Finding some other corsairs that can peer review your ability to swashbuckle and pillage. Mm-hmm.
I mean, as long as those are Union ships and Union rules are observed, I don't see a problem with that at all.
What if you... Do you have a bad vibe?
Ooh.
Oh.
Does your vibe suck?
Truly, honestly, Gable, this is paramount. Because you've got to be able to read a room. You got to be able to read a room. You got to be able to know when, like, the vibe you're giving is bringing people in and when the vibe you're giving is, like, pushing people away. Because we get so many auditioners who really just can't tell that simple fact.
It's unbelievable how many people on the ship can't tell if people appreciate the things they do and say. Now, someone like me, I can look around a room and I can know exactly what sort of sexual fantasies the people in that room might be having about me at any given time. So I'm very dialed in. I'm extremely aware. The likelihood that I'll say or do something that'll put people off is so small.
100%. It's 100% going to put someone off.
Sexual.
This is more of a, as we say, not doing it with intention.
All this to say, if you believe in yourself and you really, really want this, you should just keep on pursuing it. Pursue it doggedly for anywhere from 30 to 40 years, even if you don't get any auditions, even if you don't get any more talented. You're doing it because you love it. And that should be enough, right? Right?
Right. Right. I mean, in another life, you could have just been an accountant, but would you be happy doing that instead of being a courser?
The answer is no.
You could always... You could always fall back by working for a jackbox. That is a wooden room constructed by people that's usually an unassuming looking building in the town, and everybody jumps out of it and robs whoever passes by. They just jack them for all their shit and then leave them. A jackbox.
Honestly, that's a good gig.
It's
pretty good gig.
Or you just need to come up with a new house every couple years and you'd be set.
You could start a podcast. That's just fishing for whales, where you lower your hook into the sea and pull up as many whales as you possibly can get. Just take as many from that pod after casting out for it.
Why are you crying, Spit?
I don't know.
Well, good luck and Godspeed. And if we ever see you audition... Please improve your vibe.
Just check your vibe. You know what? We should put a mirror outside the door. That way anyone coming in can do one final vibe check as they're coming in. And it's just a courtesy to everybody.
Makes sense. This entire process is giving me a lot of self-reflection on the kind of a solo pirate career. These are the kind of conversations I wish I had when I decided to become an Araner under my initial circumstances. So thanks. I guess, for asking the question.
Professor,
Campaign Skyjacks is a One-Shot Network production. For more information, be sure to follow us on Twitter over @CampaignPod for updates about live shows and other events we might be doing.
In the universe of Starwall Odyssey, space is made out of the collective imaginations of all the thinking beings who live on various planets. These worlds are connected to each other through imagination. Common themes and ideas are strings between universes. And to get between them, people fly wooden ships that look like animals, which are powered by emotions. Also, people communicate with each other by contemplating orbs. The only way you can take pictures is getting stared at by a big psychic bug. And people have already declared victory in a war over the very concept of evil. But I'm getting ahead of myself. Starwall Odyssey follows the adventures of the hapless inhabitants of the Lucky Finn tenement building, who suddenly find that their apartment is actually a spaceship, and that they're lost in a sea of boundless imagination. It's an actual play starring me, James D'Amato, Mel D'Amato, Ali Grauer, and Drew Merzieski, as we playtest the No Kings system.
which will hopefully one day be the Skyjacks role-playing system. It toes the line between weird and wonderful slice of life and high-flying space fantasy. You can sample the first 5 episodes by searching for Starwall Odyssey on your favorite podcast app, or get the whole thing by heading to patreon.com/oneshotpodcast and signing up for $5 a month or more. You can find more great gaming shows over at oneshotpodcast.com. Jonnet Kessler was played by Tyler Davis, who can be found on Twitter and Instagram at Tyler A. Dave. Tyler is on strike alongside his fellow members of the WGA and SAG-AFTRA. You can support Tyler and other striking artists by contributing to the Entertainment Community Fund, linked in our show notes. Gable was played by Liz Anderson, who can be found on Twitter at @LizAnderson_... or on her podcast, Paired. Captain Orimar Vale was played by Nathan Blades, who can be found on Twitter at @PhantomArtsENT, or streaming at twitch.tv/TheNeonCaster. I am James D'Amato, your host and game master. You can find me on Twitter at OneShotRPG, or on my podcast, One Shot. The original music featured in this podcast was written, composed, and performed by Arnie Parrott. You can find him over on Twitter at Arnie Parrott, or on his website, ATP Tunes. This episode was edited by Allie Grauer, who can be found on Twitter at Dreams to Become, or on her podcast, Skyjack's Courier's Call. Our logo was designed by Fiona Shea, who can be found on Twitter at Lunarum. The World of Sphere was inspired in part by the music of the Decemberists and Illimat, produced by Together Studios. This show was made in part by using a modified version of the Genesis role-playing system, designed by Sam Stewart and a team of talented professionals. There are no kings. Take flight.
Health to strangers who've ever been kind, and once for our friends ne'er to rise. Twice to the dearest we're leaving behind, who know we can never deny the call of the sky.